טוב, שלום לכם. It's nice to be here. תודה רבה to David and the Tillers and Jonathan Kramer, who's not here. Thank you for... that's Jonathan. Thank you very much for opening your home, your office, and hosting the Jerusalem. My association with Yerushalayim goes back quite a while, when actually I tried to make Aliyah. I'm not going to go into the whole story, but I actually left home at the age of 11 and a half, 12. I started walking to Jerusalem. From Caulfield, Lemire Road, Caulfield. So that's when that things actually started. Aside from being, as I mentioned another occasion, an absolute moron in geography, I was picked up many miles from home and brought home at some point. I wasn't punished, but I really had to get to Jerusalem at the age of 11 and a half. So it took me too many years to get there, but 16 years ago I did manage to make Aliyah and live in Israel, and for the last 11 years of that period, in some ways it's fallen into my lap, but I'm involved in something rather unique. It's an unfolding redemption process, the building of Jerusalem, something that we think about, we maybe hear about, but I'm directly involved in that with regards to the, in a nutshell, the revival of Jewish life in what we call the heart of Jerusalem. Of course, I don't know that many people here, so I don't know how many of you are familiar with Jerusalem today, east versus west, the battle for Jerusalem, which is going on, which we may not necessarily feel. Those who go to Jerusalem, in many ways, go from a hotel, sometimes to the Kotel, a falafel in Ben Yehuda, and don't really necessarily feel or sense the struggle which is going over by the Jewish people to keep Jerusalem in Jewish hands. The reality today is that Israel is alone in the world in regards to its own recognition of its capital city, the United City of Jerusalem. The Arab world for sure wants to take Jerusalem away. The world in general says it maybe should be divided or internationalized, maybe occupied territories. Many words are used for Jerusalem today. The world definitely does not recognize our own sovereignty that we have declared since 1967 over the whole of United Jerusalem. But let me just test the waters a little bit. Does anyone know how many Jews live in East Jerusalem? And that doesn't include those who have been on tour with me recently or otherwise. Hello, is this? You're going to say 100,000 in East Jerusalem. In East what we refer to in all the newspapers, Arab East Jerusalem.
Beyond as, 29, is
that?
No. Yeah. Correct. There was a green line that the world accepts as what was West, now it's East Jerusalem. In that eastern part of Jerusalem that is always referred to as Arab East Jerusalem, how many Jews live there today?
And
we've heard 100,000, 200,000. It's obviously a slightly more knowledgeable group than most, because I 99% of the times get people that say anywhere between a few hundred, maybe what Atzeret Konim have done over the few years, maybe 5,000. Of course, there's 215,000 Jews living in East Jerusalem today. And that's not propaganda, that's just reality. There are neighbourhoods like Gilo, Givat Mesua, Armon HaNatziv, French Hill, Neve Yaakov, Pisgat Zev, Ramat Eshkol, Ramot, all East Jerusalem. Those who have been to Jerusalem, been to these neighbourhoods, say, what the hell are you talking about? These are just regular neighbourhoods in Jerusalem. You're right. They're regular neighbourhoods in Jerusalem that the world does not recognise. So, for example, when I was shooting from Beit Lechem into Gilo a few years ago with the second, third, or fourth intifada, whatever it was, they were shooting. In Fox, it was presented as they weren't shooting at citizens, residents of Jerusalem. No. There's been shooting today on Fox News, sort of part supporters, sometimes positive, shooting at the right-wing settlers living in the outpost of Gilo. That's how the world refers to it. Now, there's obviously something very obvious that you start be churning around in your minds already now. If there's 215,000 Jews living in East Jerusalem, what used to be East Jerusalem, there's also 230,000-odd Arabs living in the same area, Jewish Arab, boom, 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 all over East Jerusalem, then why is there a need for an organisation or someone like me to go around the world trying to get the Jewish people involved in the battle for Jerusalem in some format? Jerusalem is already in our hands. Not even left-wing extremists, lunatics like Yossi Beilin, believes for a second that a single Jew is going to be taken out of it. He's one of the more extremes in Israel today, if I can choose someone. Not even he believes that a single Jew is going to be taken out of his house, like happened in Gush Katif. It's not going to happen from Ramat Eshkol, from French Hill. It's just not going to happen. He knows that. Has he said it in the BBC? No, but he said it not even in Israel. So once again, the question begs, if they're not going to be taken out, then the truth is, on the ground today, East Jerusalem doesn't exist. When you read Arab East Jerusalem, it's rubbish, and the world is churning water if they think that Jerusalem can be divided. So why didn't he have Terry Kony? Why didn't he need someone trying to find the Arabs who are ready to sell and do everything possible to try and buy back Jerusalem? Move the Arabs overseas, pretend court cases, middlemen, absolute nightmare negotiations sometimes for one particular place. We've got East Jerusalem, it's finished. So here's the story. If you look at this, I apologise, it's not bigger, but you'll get the idea anyway. If the yellow area here is West Jerusalem, 1948, of course, we won the war, lost Jerusalem, physical division. All around Jerusalem was the country Jordan. It's interesting, actually, of course, during that whole period between 48 and 1967, you wonder, where was the so-called Palestinian people declaring we want a state, want a state? We didn't have Jerusalem. We didn't have Hebron. We didn't have Judea and Samaria, the West Bank. We had nothing. It was, everything was theirs. Did we hear a word out of, we want a state, we want sovereignty, we love this country? There was nothing. Today we've dug ourselves a little bit of a hole, or a big hole, depending on where you come from politically. But none of this, nothing happened with the so-called Palestinians or Palestinian Arabs between 48 and 67. Comes along 1967, did we win or lose the war? We won the war. And the Israeli government does the following. See the green area? We, the Israeli government, left and right-wing governments, no one has said otherwise since, we, the Israeli government, declare we are now drawing up new borders of Jerusalem. From 1967. In that area, yes, there were towns. Maybe little villages. Maybe neighbourhoods under the Jordanians. Sheikh Jarrah, that used to be called Shimon HaTzadik, Ras Ramud, and Male HaZaitin, depending on what name. Names are everything. Of course, you can be a settler, you can be a resident. You can be living in Ras Ramud, or you can be Male HaZaitin. You can be living in the city of David, or the Yemenite village, or Silwan. It's all just a game of words, depending on who's talking to what BBC or CNN, etc. But in this area, there were a few Arab towns. No one is denying there weren't Arabs living in this area over here. No one near the numbers we see today, but there were towns there, which is important to note. Because today when you drive around Jerusalem and you see that Ramot does not look like Silwan, it's a disgrace that there's such a difference. It is a disgrace there's a difference. There shouldn't be. All neighbourhoods should be the same. They should be investing millions of dollars into Arab neighbourhoods. But don't anyone stand up and think that it should be like that already now. It's impossible. Israel inherited these backwater towns from the Jordanians in 67. How can Silwan possibly look like Ramot? Ramot is a new area built post-67. You want Silwan to look like a beautiful Jewish neighbourhood? Take everyone out, start from afresh. Could you imagine that passing in the world? They try and destroy one building, an illegal Arab building, and they're discussing it in the United Nations, for heaven's sake. The focus of the world on Jerusalem is beyond proportion. Someone sent me an email about it already a year ago. I know some of you may have seen it. It was a four-part caption cartoon where Obama is asleep in each one of them. And the top one, he's asleep and the phone rings, the White House, please wake up, there's an epidemic, a million people dying in Europe, we need America. Second one, there's a world war. Another one, a tsunami, a tidal wave. Massive worldwide events changing the course of history. And he's going slipping through the whole thing. The fourth caption is the embassy in Jerusalem that rings up to Obama, please wake up, two Jewish families just moved into East Jerusalem. Of course, he wakes up straight away, why wasn't I woken earlier? It's beyond proportion sometimes the focus of the world on this tiny strip of land called Jerusalem. So in 67 we go back and we start building neighbourhoods to the north and northeast and the south and southeast. So if you have a look here, more or less the same thing but in different colours. If that was pre-67 all around, this dark green area was not defined. It was only defined in 67. But post-67, a whole lot of purple neighbourhoods are coming up. And they're all built to the north and northeast and the south and southeast. There is a tiny area, literally, to the east, but all part of what used to be East Jerusalem, just here, the brown area and the green area around, where there was never, ever any massive Jewish buildings or neighbourhoods built. Why? Because the Arabs stayed in all of those areas. It wasn't an empty block of land. Arabs were living in the old city when we came back in 67. Arabs were living in Silwan, the old Ir David, Yemenite neighbourhood, whatever you want to call it. Yes, they were living there. And the Israeli government did not pull out or drive out anyone from Jerusalem. The one area where there was, you could say, Arabs taken out of their homes is the area literally right in front of the Kotel. Today, those who are familiar with the Western Wall Plaza, it's a rather large area. But pre-67, it was a narrow corridor, maybe 5 or 6 metres wide by 30-odd metres or something. That area was cleared and dilapidated. The Arabs were living there. They were relocated. They were given new homes. That's the one area there was, I don't like using the word, but call it what you like, but some type of exchange or transfer moved out of the Kotel area. The rest of Yerushalayim didn't happen. Which means that the Arabs stayed in all the old Jewish buildings. What do I mean by old Jewish buildings? I'm not talking about Abraham. I'm not talking about Isaac and promises from God. That, in my mind at least, is clear. I don't have to go back that far. Because if I was a Turkish lecturer or a Turkish tour guide talking to you 130 years ago, I'd be telling you, first of all, the whole of Jerusalem in those years was what? Just the walled city. Remember, till 1860, there was nothing outside the walls. It only started from 1860 onwards. Me'a Sharim, Nachalat Yehuda, Gunisht outside. This is Yerushalayim. And pre-1870, according to a Turkish census, not a Teret Konim PR, this area, there were 28,500 residents. Look up any Turkish census you like from 1840, 1870, 1890, even towards the British, but then already they were living outside. 28,500, just under 29,000 residents. How many Jews? 19,500. How many people know that today? We bring up a generation of half-wits to think that for generations this has been some international city, which of course puts more pressure on Israel to divide the city. A little bit the Armenians, a little bit the Muslims, a little bit the Christian, all over. That was something that was done by the British many years later because they didn't want to mix the Jews and the Arabs. But in the 1800s, Jews and Arabs living together with a Jewish majority. The students of the Vilna Gaon came in the early 1800s and they lived in an area called Baba El Huta. We have information of 35 or 40 compounds in the area between the Lion's Gate and the Flower's Gate, Baba El Huta, the middle of the Muslim Quarter. Just to get your bearings, if this is the Western Wall, this is the Jewish ninth. I don't like calling it a quarter because it's a bit deceiving. It's about one ninth of the old city. The Muslims, boom, 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 boom. You could probably add the Temple Mount because more or less they're in charge. I mean, Motsu Gur would be rolling in his grave, but that doesn't matter. The Temple Mount is not in our hands today. It's more or less they're in charge there, which is another aspect that we have to somehow cope with. Violence works. If you didn't know it beforehand, understand. Violence in the Middle East works. The Arabs use it all the time. Why can't a Jew say a prayer in the Temple Mount? You have to respect that the Arabs have got what they've got there since the 1600s when Abd al-Malik built it. 100%. No question. Okay. I should not be able to pray. I can't open my mouth. There was a lady sat in jail for three days, 2 weeks ago because she said Tehillim on the Temple Mount. You know why you know the Jews don't want to say a prayer there? Violence. It would upset the Arab world. There'd be violence in another world war. Therefore, you Jews, you can't pray. Lahavdil, the Christians can't pray either, but that I'm not so concerned about. Not even a word of a prayer on the Temple Mount. The Arabs also know the more violence, the more rockets, eventually the Jews will submit. Once you open the door for a little bit of compromise, they're going to eat you up like I don't know what. Muslim quarter, Christian quarter, Armenian quarter, Jewish ninth. All of these flags that you may or may not see, but you've got the maps, is the work of Ateret Konim that has gone back there. So the Jewish majority that existed in the 1870s wiped out pogroms, 1920. Pogrom, 1928-29. Pogrom, 1936-37. 1948, Arois. Jews out, we lost the old city. The white flag goes up, 700 prisoners of war. Old city finish, gone. We come back in 67. Oh, we're back home. We build the beautiful Jewish quarter. That itself was a miracle, I'm not going to go into it, but in a nutshell, the Jordanians took out of that area the Arabs who had squatted since 1948. They had a master plan to redevelop the area. They didn't know it was going to be a six-day war. That for sure weren't even going to be in it. That was a mistake also. Another story. But in any case, we come back and there's an area which is more or less empty. That's the beautiful Jewish quarter of today. But one man, 33 years ago, Mati Dan, said, well, what about all the other Jewish homes? What about the synagogues and the yeshivot? I mean, if I was living in a 70-year-old mosque, I wouldn't last a week. It wouldn't last 24 hours, maybe. But all these years, all the old synagogues, the old yeshivot, the old homes, Arabs are in. You see, when we came back in 67, what did the Israeli government say? We're not going to kick out Mustafa and Ahmed. it makes maybe a certain amount of sense. Maybe he's not responsible for what took place 70 years ago in the pogroms. Maybe he changed hands 4 or 5 times. Moral, don't touch him. Okay. He's a protected tenant. It's an old British law. He can stay in the house, he has rights. His children have rights if they live with them before they die. The wives of the children have the rights, they can stay there also. 3 levels of part ownership but not ownership, rights in his building. If an Arab wants to sell, a Jew buys. Anything wrong with that? I mean, if I was living in Melbourne, I want to sell, an Italian, a Christian, anyone can buy. It's buying and selling. No one's kicked out. Yes, we have pretend court cases to protect the Arabs. I told you before, it's very dangerous for an Arab to sell. He's actually killed. That's why it's rather dangerous. It's, yeah, I could say so. An Arab was killed, for example, remember 4 years ago? There was a place sold near Mount Scopus. We only deal in the Holy Basin. Mount Scopus. The Arab didn't know Jews were moving in there. A middleman was used. Jews moved in. He goes berserk. Goes to Jericho, the tzaddikim in Jericho, to clear his name. I'm not sure how much he said, because all that was printed in the press, because they found his body the day after, he was shot in the head 7 times, his body was burnt at a stake in the middle of the town square of Jericho, and dumped out of Jericho. An innocent Arab, by the way. So far, thank God, no Arab has been killed dealing with a Tehillim for 33 years. Because we do everything possible, even if we look bad sometimes, in a court case, that he's protected. There's no shortage of Arabs ready to sell today, there's definitely no shortage of Jews moving in, and today, just to complete the picture, there are 32,000 residents of the Old City, 5,000 Jews. 4,000 in the Jewish Shnaith, and another 1,000 in the work of Atzeret Kohanim. But of course, a few years ago, we realised, especially with the pressure of Oslo and the world, because, I mean, the whole world wants Jerusalem. I mean, Arafat, what was his famous line? The only Jews I would ever allow in my Al-Quds are those who have been here for generations. Muhammad Abbas, Jerusalem is a red line that must not be crossed. We need to unite in the battle to defend Al-Quds. Our people will continue to cling to the land of our holy city, and we will be victorious in resisting its Judaization, its takeover, and the expulsion of its citizens. What else did Arafat say? Our blood and fire will redeem Jerusalem. Al-Quds is our primary goal. Oh, you know the missiles that landed in Gush Katif? All those thousands of missiles? That was another brilliant move. You know, to take out, let's make peace with the Arab world. Everything's going to be okay. They really do love us. They preach and teach coexistence. Why don't we just destroy 10,000 people's lives? Why don't we just uproot graves and everything will be okay? Well, even sections of the left wing in Israel woke up after Gush Katif. They saw that the recipe of land for peace was not so straightforward. Because after 10,000 people's lives were destroyed in Gush Katif, you suddenly had missiles landing in regular cities, Ashdod, Ashkelon. So it's not so straightforward, this whole concept even of land for peace. Today, in addition to the life that has been revitalized in the old Jewish quarter, there is 50% Jews, 50% Arabs living in the original city of David, side by side. And in a very strange twist of things, and for those who understand politics and Jews living together and left and right in Israel, you may be surprised what I'm about to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. We are the only organization working in peace and coexistence. Why? Well, the left wing in Israel today is talking about separation. Them over there and us over here. Divide, separate. Who needs them? Who needs us? Let's defend, separate. In this case scenario that we're talking about Jews and Arabs living together. I'm not going to pretend that it's wonderful, lovey-dovey peace. It's the most basic coexistence that is possible on the world, in the earth maybe. But when you're side by side, sometimes living in the same courtyard, Jews and Arabs together, what, he's going to send his son to become a suicide bomber? No. There's Ahlan Mas'alan, how are you? He doesn't want to marry me, I don't want to marry him. He doesn't want to spend Shabbos with me, I don't want to spend his Idul Fitr with him. There is clear separation of where we are, life and otherwise. But understand that we are talking about living side by side, but under Jewish sovereignty. That there is no question. Maybe it's not being stepping up to the world, but this city belongs to Jewish people, nekuda, period. There is no discussion, there is no compromise. Families are now living in the old Yemenite village. I believe the world calls that Siwan. They actually call it Ir David Siwan because they don't recognize the city of David or the connection there. They can scream to their blue in the face, but this is Ir David. This is the Yemenite village. And today there are plenty, no shortage of Arabs, there's nothing wrong with it, living in the area that they refer to as Siwan. There is a Jewish neighborhood on the Mount of Olives today called Ma'ale Azitim. Probably one of the most, biggest success story of the organization. There's a Jewish neighborhood that was being built on the Mount of Olives. You don't have to get to the Mount of Olives, which is an ancient cemetery, in a casket. Today you can go to the Mount of Olives, walking, jumping, walking. There's a whole neighborhood there, 110 families living on Har HaZeitim.
And the mountain behind Hagar's Etzion, there are families going to be, they're already living there, six families living in probably the most important neighborhood to be built in Jerusalem, called Kibmat Zion, 300 families, as stage one only, at the edge of Jerusalem, opposite Abu Dis. Have you heard of Abu Dis? Some of you? Abu Dis, those who don't know, was going to be the beginning of the takeover of Jerusalem. Arafat was promised.
Parliament.
It started with the parliament, didn't you hear what you said? They started with building the Palestinian Parliament House in Abu Dis. It's about 1.5 kilometers from Ben Yehuda. In 1995, Arafat Yemach Shemoh was promised what? You'll get five of the seven gates of the old city. You'll get the eastern neighborhoods. Start building your Palestinian Parliament House. He was allowed to have Palestinian police in Jerusalem. And in this mountain behind Har HaZeitim, there was already Palestinian police and flags throughout this whole area right behind Har HaZeitim. That was the situation in 1995. I don't know how many of you were there in that year, but if you would have gone on a little bit outside the old city, you'd see exactly what I'm talking about. And then in the year 2000, because he's rubbing his hands, he thinks he's about to get the whole of Jerusalem, Barak the genius makes the offer to Arafat. Take my mother-in-law, take my grandmother, take 95% of Judea and Samaria. Take everything, take five, take Yerushalayim, take. Arafat says, nope, I actually want more. I love Jerusalem, I love Israel so much, I want even more. Barak says, get your flags out of Jerusalem, get your fleets out of Jerusalem. You're not going to get Abu Dis's Area A. If Abu Dis was Area A today, none of you would be in Jerusalem. Those of you who do visit, you wouldn't be visiting Jerusalem. Just like none of you visit the beaches, you don't run to the beaches in Ashdod and Ashkelon. Maybe it's a missile, maybe not. You're not going to take your kids and your grandmother to the beach in Ashkelon. You wouldn't be coming to Jerusalem, for sure. 1.5 kilometers to Ben Yehuda. You know, today we're talking about what missiles do the Arabs have? Do they have 10-kilometer missiles? Do they have 15-kilometer missiles? What do they have? Forget missiles here. Basic mortar from Abu Dis in the middle of Jerusalem, none of you would be turning up. But none of that happened, because Arafat refused the offer. There's a Jewish neighborhood that's going to be built there. Jews, Arabs living together, and it's relatively quiet, except for maybe one area, to be honest. That's the Yemenite village. Silwan is a hotbed for Arab terrorism. They just found another terrorist cell 10 days ago. There's been a number of serious arrests. There was a guy that was given 6 years for throwing a Molotov cocktail at a Border Patrol policeman there. It took place a number of months ago, but they just caught him recently. He's 6 years in jail. This particular area here, we're talking Molotov cocktails every single day. You're talking washing machines, frigidaires being dropped down on the vehicle as they're coming in from the neighborhood every single day. This picture here, if I'm not mistaken, I think was a washing machine that slammed down from 3 stories high as the vehicle was bringing the families into the neighborhood. Molotov cocktail has dropped down from 170 to 50-odd incidents. There's a new district police officer in charge of the Yerushalayim. He's knuckled down. There's been a number of serious arrests, but that's over here. Everywhere else, it's relatively quiet because of numbers. Every one of our buildings, here and outside, there is a rooftop playground. There is a security booth. The government has to look after all its residents. We don't ask for it, but the government figures, we can't afford to put a police station every time, extra police. We pay for a private security company, the government says this, $12 million a year, to look after all the residents of the old city, Shimon HaTzadik, Har HaZeitim, Kibmat Zion, Ir David, Kfar HaShiloach, $12 million a year. There are security guards in-house, and there are security guards that walk the very young kids backwards and forwards, because kids don't walk by themselves, just like our kids don't play in the street yet. We haven't reached that stage in the redemption process of kids being able to play in the street, so if we find some donor to help put a rooftop playground, then that's what we have in some of the buildings. The work of the organisation, it may already be understood from what I've said, there's obviously the side of the organisation that's involved in the acquisitions, purchases. That doesn't go through the organisation. No one gives a donation in order to buy a place and it's in their name. They buy it, it's in their name. You can call it an ideological investment. It's not a donation. Atirat Konim doesn't have things in our name. It doesn't go through us for any tax reasons, not for tax reasons, but it makes sense. It's an acquisition by the person in their name, and they get the rent for the families that are living there. It's not a huge rent. We're not talking Turak. We're not talking Rechavia. This is 20 shekels a square meter, but we're not a charity organisation. Families move in, or maybe yeshiva students or whatever, and they just pay to the investor, whoever it is. Not that they really care, because the people who do it are doing it because they want to keep Yerushalayim, and they realize that facts on the ground is not what's going to make the difference. Of course, the Arabs are not stupid. Violent and not stupid. And today they are doing exactly the opposite in a bigger and better way. There are no shortage of huge multi-million dollar funds today from Morocco, Arab Emirates, going to the Waqf or other organizations, not profits, to strengthen Arab roots in the heart of Jerusalem to divide the city. The exact mirror image of what we're trying to do. They're just doing it in a bigger and better way. And there's no cheshbon. They don't give a damn. Not just build, they just do. So if there was a loft 5 years ago, today it's a beautiful community center. If there were two stories that are built today, there's three stories. And you may ask, what about building permits? Forget building permits. If you're an Arab, it doesn't make a difference. If you don't have a true Baal Habayit, if you don't have a true person in charge, then they just get away with doing anything. For example, over here, and if you can see, this is the same area. It's the old King's Garden, Gan HaMelech. It's an area, those who have been to the city of David, you go down to the valley and there's the natural, the spring, the Shiloh Springs. Water flows to the whole valley, even to this very day. That valley was called Gan HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech planted every conceivable tree there. He writes about it in Shir HaShirim, and for 3,000 years it was a green zoned area under the Turks, under the British, under the Jordanians, under everyone, under the Israelis, under us. In the last 35 or 40 years, the Arabs have built 122 homes, 88 specifically in this national park, illegal building. In the whole area of Silwan, there's 597 building structures. There are 7 building permits on file. 7. Check it up, do what you like. Arabs, of course, are in a little bit of a bind. Why? On one hand, they say, we can't get building permits. On the other hand, they say, if I go to the municipality, what am I doing? I'm accepting the fact that there is a sovereign Jewish body, which I don't really want to do. So they basically just keep on going illegal. But the mayor today is trying to clean up the act a little bit. Not much success. You may remember, if you're well read, he actually wanted to destroy 88 buildings in the Gan HaMelech. Of course, Hillary Clinton said, how can you? This is Jerusalem. You have no rights. The whole works. Pressure here, pressure here. He wrote an article in the New York Times saying what the mayor of New York would allow building in Central Park. But the pressure did what it had to do, and he backed down from 88. And he said, okay, we'll retroactively approve 66 Arab homes and we'll wipe out only 22. To bring back a national park, which would be good for the Jews and for the Arabs, by the way, because they are in the area. That also, nothing's happened, not one has been demolished. So it's not so straightforward, all this illegal building, but I'm only bringing this up because the Arab world is doing everything possible to divide the city. Arab facts, Arab presence. That we won't become a majority overnight. I'm not going to pretend we will. At the rate that we're going, let's meet again in 300 years and maybe we'll have a lechaim. But we're not going to be a majority overnight. But enough facts on the ground can tip this balance enough. There's a certain point where they realise it's finished. I mean, the Muhammad Abbas, what did he say? One more family moves into the old city, it's the end of the peace process. No one's quite sure what peace process, but doesn't matter, that's what he said. One more family. Today we can buy more homes. Today we can add more families if we're to renovate places, but that takes the Jewish people to wake up. We're brain dead today. I say it in every form, we do not realise what is happening on the ground every centimetre. And there's no shortage of Jewish money and wealth around the world to make a change for Yerushalayim. And I don't care whether it's buying in your own right, or whether it be renovating to add families, or taking on a rooftop playground or a security booth, or we have play centers, nurseries. There are things that need to be done. There's no shortage of charities anywhere around the world. But Yerushalayim has to be somewhere in our mindset to be involved in some format, which is the reason why I'm here, obviously. I'm not just here to give a nice little lecture. I need people somehow involved. What that involvement is up to you, of course, but there's many needs. Of course, those that believe Yerushalayim should be divided and we don't have rights and we should be giving it to the Arabs, then I guess you're probably not happy with what I've said for the last 25 minutes. But those that believe Yerushalayim should stay in Jewish hands, and that you can't just pray to God or daven to God or sing to God that everything's going to be okay because you can't sit back and wait for miracles, then you understand, hopefully, the importance of Jewish presence and of increasing Jewish life in this holy basin.
Daniel, you're appealing to the world. What do the Israelis think about this? Our own people.
Well, as
the
opposed
from outside.
Yeah, okay.
Do you have their heart?
I'll tell you a few things. I'll start with the Arabs. I'm not a big fan of polls and consensus. What are the word? Census is taken.
There may have been 2,000 to 3,000 Arabs interviewed. What's it? Not interviewed. I'm using the wrong word. When you go around and ask polls,
surveyed
about 4 months ago. 63% of the Arabs, at least the survey in Jerusalem, want to be under Israel's sovereignty. I mean, they're not totally stupid. They know that what life is like under the under Hamas or in the PA makes no difference. Life is good under the Jews. They know that. It has been like that ever since we came back to Israel. So from the Arabs' point of view, we want to stay united under the Jews. They may not love me. Tomorrow they could maybe turn around and stab me if there was a pogrom. I don't know. That's it, nigmar. But today the bread is buttered and they're quite happy. That's for the Arabs. For the Jews, there's a clear consensus. That you, it's not talking about a hilly outcrop. This is not Judea and Samaria. Me personally, the whole area belongs to us. For God, this is a nightmare, this Palestinian state. But for Israel, we are still divided on what should happen to Judea and Samaria. Everyone agrees that we don't want another more in Gush Katif. We don't want to have more taking out 500,000 Jews from the West Bank to the Yehuda Vashemon. We're not going to move myself from Mali Adum with 40,000 people. That's not going to happen. Even the left wing in Israel are talking about settlement blocks. Yerushalayim, what, you need to be religious to believe in Yerushalayim, to understand Yerushalayim? 450,000 people visited Ir David last year. School children, secular, religion, makes no difference. We're not talking about Hebron, Beit El, where maybe you'd be a little bit more to the right or religious to understand, appreciate the importance of that to Am Yisrael. Every Tom, Dick and Harry, or Uncle Yitzchak and Uven, would understand the importance of, you know, Ir David, Har HaBayit, Yerushalayim, the Kotel. Well, I'm going to give this to the Arabs? No. And left and right wing governments have been pumping money into the security. They won't Judaize Yerushalayim. You know why? Because 21 years ago, when Ariel Sharon, who by the way bought an apartment in this particular building here, can say many things about him which we're not going to talk, and not even God knows what to do with him. He's actually caught between worlds, you know, merits and not merits, whatever. But he bought a place in Yerushalayim, right here. Actually, put my mention Ariel Sharon. Because 21 years ago, he actually helped the head of the organization acquire funds. He went overseas with Mati Dan, the founder, and to get funds to buy the biggest building inside the old city in today's Christian quarter that Arafat Emma Shemoy wanted as his foothold of Jerusalem before Orient House. This was going to be the property owned by the Greek Orthodox Church. Cost a $5 million deal. 1.7 or 1.9 came from the Israeli government that Sharon managed by this committee, that committee, whatever, managed. When America found out the year after that Israel was Judaizing, God forbid, fulfilling the Zionist dream and Judaizing Jerusalem, they wiped off 1.9 off the budget the following year as a symbolic gesture. So ever since, nada, nothing. Private individuals, foundations, funds, people that love Yerushalayim, prepared to do something, not sit in the backsides, not be apathetic, doing something and buying back Yerushalayim. So you've got the investments, you've got the donations. Did I answer your question, I think, plus minus? Yeah.
What's the ultimate goal of a Torah Kohanim? And also, what's the connection to Kohanim?
I'll answer your second question first. Give me time to think about the answer the first one. It's deceiving. It has nothing to do with what we do, obviously, which actually caused me no end of trouble, because I sometimes speak to audiences and you have half the audience that thinks, you're the Mishiganists that go to the Temple Mount, the Temple Mount faithful? Oh no, you must be the ones that make the utensils, the Temple Institute. We're neither. We're not a yeshiva, we're not this, we're not that. 33 years ago, the head of the organization, with a few other Kohanim, said, if the Mashiach is around the corner, this is post Six-Day War, etc., etc., we got to be ready. In exile, what have we learned? Shabbos, Sukkah, Yom HaShoah. But what do we know really? Tachlis, Harabayit, Korbanos, Kohuna, Begadim. We know nothing. Let's learn about the crown of priests, Ateret Kohanim. Let's learn about the Kohen Amid and the Bet HaMikdash. So it started as a part yeshiva, kollel, whatever it was. Within the first, I think, 6 to 7 months, everything changed. They had their first annual general meeting. Some guy stood up and said, listen, with all due respect, gentlemen, before the spiritual redemption, there has to be the physical redemption. What, you want the Bet HaMikdash to come flying down when there's all these Arabs and mosques and churches all around? You need, first of all, the physical redemption. Ingathering of the exiles, the deserts will bloom, and then we can worry about the unity of the Jewish people, more mitzvot, the kuhuna, shoy shoy, all in good time, we'll get to that. So the concept changed totally, but the name stayed. In America, it's actually known as the Jerusalem Reclamation Project, or Jerusalem Chai, which is something we've taken on the last few years. But Ateret Kohanim doesn't. To answer your other question about the ultimate goal, I can tell you what we stand for.
We stand for basically revitalizing Jewish roots in the heart of Yerushalayim, centered around educational institutes, keeping Jerusalem in Jewish hands. The ultimate goal, I don't think we've ever discussed it, you know, Arabs and Christians, the Havdil, should be able to live in Jerusalem. The second, of course, he sends his kid to become a suicide bomber, or he wants me out, or he wants sovereignty in my city, then he may not be so welcome. But anyone else that wants to live in Jerusalem, lamalo. You know, it should be for everybody, as long as they realize it's a Jewish state for Jewish people, Jewish capital, united, etc., etc. There was something behind you wanted to ask something, or no? I'm just scratching his head. No. Did you want to ask something? No. Okay. That in a nutshell is everything. Well, not everything, but more or less, I think you've got the idea about what we do. It's not straightforward. I don't pretend there aren't political ramifications for what we do, although that's not the reason why we do anything. Jews have always wanted to get back to Yerushalayim, and thank God we've reached this time in Jewish history where we don't just have to be a little lemelach or little pathetic Jews, you know, walking around some ghetto scared of the lis above. We've got our own state today. We've got our own army. Zionism dream. The dream of Zionism is not dead, and it's unfolding in a certain way here. All I'm asking is that the Jewish world that believes that somehow take a part in this whole process. The truth is that we shouldn't exist. Why? Who should be doing the work that we're doing?
The government.
Government, or specifically the JNF. The JNF was set up to redeem land for the Jewish people. And the only reason we have cities and settlements and towns in Yerushalayim today is because my grandmother, and even me as a young kid actually remember, I think going door knocking or something like that, the money in the blue boxes. That's why most of the land in Israel is not privately owned. It's owned by the Israel Lands Authority, the JNF. They don't do it in Jerusalem. In fact, quite the reverse, unfortunately. Amazing organisation, wonderful tree planting reservoirs, but this is not, they don't do it in Yerushalayim. We are the JNF of Jerusalem. I don't think they'd like if I said that, so please don't report that anyway. The last thing I need is the JNF saying that. But in some ways, we are. In fact, 33 years ago, the head of the organisation, I'll just finish off with this, the head of the organisation went to the JNF in order to get them involved. He was a young 25, 26-year-old guy, and he said, listen, this is what we should be doing. It's what you should be doing. Could you help me out? I've got this idea. There's all this old Jewish property. Let's redeem. Let's buy back Jerusalem. The guy, his name was Shemesh, Shemesh. The guy's name was sitting opposite some big machlok at the JNF. How about you help me? Well, I don't think our American donors would like this. It's a little bit too political. I'm not sure. Blah, 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 blah. We like it. I've got to put you in touch with an Arab that does work for the JNF. We can't help you directly. The guy from the JNF never followed it up, or maybe Mati Dan, the founder, didn't follow it up, but he didn't meet this Arab. 3 years later, he's engaged to his wife. He had to meet her at the central bus station. He goes to the Jaffa Gate. There, those who are familiar, there's a taxi stand just here near the Jaffa Gate, where they're all Arab drivers. It's fine to take them. They happen to be Arab drivers. One guy wouldn't take him, was waiting for an American tourist. Another guy was having a cup of coffee, and the third one got angry because Mati put his luggage in the vehicle. Okay. Doesn't know what to do, he's running late to meet his fiancée. He quickly runs out of the Jaffa Gate to the road down below, flags down a taxi, thinking it's a Jew, slightly different taxi, gets in, these damn Arab taxi drivers actually were driven out of this country, he says to the driver. The driver was another Arab. Everybody except for me. He goes, yes, thank you for taking me, I appreciate it. You understand nothing. And the guy takes out a gun from his glove box. See, in the middle of town, this young 28, 29-year-old guy now, with an Arab with a gun in the middle of the street, don't worry! I work with secret police, Israeli government, the municipality, the JNF, rattled up all these organisations he works for. As it worked out later, he actually had a few medals of honour working for the Shabbat, the secret service, Israel, for things he had done with certain Arab towns, but it's another story. In any case, what do you do with the JNF? Make lots of money off you Jews. Lots of money. But you Jews, you no love Jerusalem. You no love. I go JNF, I say I have property in Old City and Silwan, you're the big part of Israel. JNF never buy. You no love. You say next to you in Jerusalem, but you no mean it. So Mati says, listen, anytime you've got a property, you come to me, I'm your man. He wrote his name on a piece of paper, phone number, name, gave him a little siddur, healing book, gay, he probably didn't say it in Yiddish, but he said, go, find for me properties to buy. This Arab helped us buy 40% of the properties in Eir David. 11 out of the 50-odd properties in the old Jewish quarter, he's responsible for. 8-9 years after they met by chance in the taxi, the other Arabs found out who was the shtinker, the Arab selling to all the filthy Jews. Sent 4 guys to his home to shoot him up. Barged in the door one night, middle in the middle of Siwan. 5 bullet holes in his chest. He was sitting on the couch. Rushed to hospital. He survived. The doctors were blown out of their minds. They thought he was a Jew because they take out of his pocket a blood-drenched Tehillim book. The Tehillim book, don't ask why. For 7-8 years, this Arab happened to keep this holy book in his pocket. Okay? Then Matty Dunn comes, because his phone number was on a piece of paper. He comes to what's name? And the family comes, they're kissing him, they're kissing the Tehillim book. The doctors still can't believe what they're looking at. They take the Tehillim book and they frame it, of course. And the Arabs keep it for many, many months, but Matthew was desperate to get the Tehillim book back. He says, listen, I've got to be able to tell other people about this story, and I need to have the Tehillim book back. Finally, the Arab gave it back to me. He says, listen, I'll give it back to you on condition you buy me another Tehillim book, but this time, please make it a bit thicker. So Matthew had to buy him a thick Tehillim book. He bought him a thick Tehillim book. He's got it. He's very, actually, he passed away recently, but his son is still around. And we've actually got the Tehillim book. It's from time to time, I'm allowed to take it overseas if it stays only with me in my overnight luggage case. I've got a few skeptics or lefties in the audience that basically don't believe. In any case, this is the Tehillim book. It's not a fake. This is the blood, the one that hit him in the shoulder, dripped down over the top of the Tehillim. And the one that should have gone through his heart and killed him on the spot didn't penetrate. No blood. I'm sorry, the doctors could not believe what they're looking at here. The Arabs frame it, open it up. The word that it goes through, the end of the hole, Chatzerot Hashem, the courtyards of God, Yerushalayim. And what are the words straight after the hole? Libi u'besari yirananu el kelchai. Those don't understand, my heart and my flesh will rejoice to a living God. That's the words of an end of a bullet hole that did not penetrate a tiny healing book of an Arab that was doing some work for Atenet Kohanim. He obviously had some merits upstairs. He survived. His son's a Michigan now. So ready, if you were to close your eyes and listen to his son, you think he's a Chabad Shaliah. He goes around. There's nothing wrong with Chabad Shlichim, I'm telling you. But I once met this guy. I never met him. I was with a group one day in Yerushalayim. I was with the head of the organization. We're taking this potential investors around, whatever. And this guy comes up, and Mati calls him over. He gets stuck into this group. You don't love Jerusalem. Why aren't you buying Jerusalem? Don't you want the Beit HaMikdash? I swear to you, this is the son of the guy that was... Anyway, to this very day, we still look after him with his walkie-talkies, etc. But he doesn't do that much work. A little bit from time to time. But an interesting case. There's no shortage of Arabs ready to sell. There's no shortage of families ready to move in. We need Am Yisrael involved. And I don't care whether you can... If you can open up a door to someone that can do something, then good. If you can take on a little project, wonderful. You can help out in any way for a kids project, a security project, add another family, whatever you can do, Baruch Hashem. If not, then think of us. Daven and pray, and those of us who walk through the Red Sea will hopefully split the sea. Yeah?
Just to get a sense of the supply-demand situation on properties in outside the Jewish border,
yep.
If you had 10 times the funding, if you have...
Yerushalayim would be a different... But change the face of Yerushalayim today. There's no... With the files open... Obviously, there's nowhere. We don't go door knocking. Mind you, if we had this multi-million-dollar Jewish fund like the Arabs, if we were Arabs, we'd have Jerusalem. If you can sort of understand that.
How do you protect the Arabs who are going to serve? You said before you protect them.
We move them overseas. We have pretend court cases. We have middlemen. We sometimes don't get into a building for a few years. Who's going to remember? And we have our Arabs living there from time to time, whatever. Who's going to remember that some guy, Ahmed, sold it 7-8 years beforehand?
No,
that's why you have pretend court cases. First of all, they don't have the tabu, is not in their name anyway. In many of the places we're buying, who owns the places? A tabu is a deed. Those who don't understand, you have to remember, many of the places we're talking about, the deed is for some Jew. The Arabs know that they don't have the title to many of these places. The deed is with some Jew from 130 years ago. It could be with the Greek Orthodox Church, sometimes we buy from the church. The church, the Greek church, they own tons of land. They own 23% of the old city. They own the Knesset. The Great Synagogue, you like that? The Great Synagogue owned by the Greek Orthodox Church? Sorry?
They're not selling.
No, but you can definitely get, under the right circumstances, which we've managed to on a number of occasions, long-term leaseholds, and if you're a company, you don't die, so it's like you've got it forever and a day. For 199 years with a continual rolling lease. But in Rehavia, for example, if you ever buy in Rehavia, if you've got a good Jewish lawyer, what does he ask? Who owns it? Is it the Greek Orthodox Church or is it some Jew? Because 60% of Rehavia is owned by the Greek Orthodox, which is why some things are coming up for releasing in 17 years. It's not like my great-grandchildren worry about it. It's quite different.
Well, so, they're on 99-year leases.
Sorry?
Are they on 99-year
leases? Yeah, but the Israeli government's got the Greek Orthodox Church by...
Somewhere on 40.
Got them anyway. But,
40.
Right. They've got them. So basically, the Israeli government made a law in 67. We decide who's going to be the Greek patriarch. At the moment, if those who are very well read would know that there was a huge furor in the Greek Orthodox Church because Jewish concerns with Atzeret Kohanim basically bought the two massive hotels in the Jaffa Gate. Most Jews don't know where these hotels are. Do you know why? Because when most Jews come into the Jaffa Gate, they go like this. their head down, there's all these Arabs everywhere. They walk like this, they quickly go to the right, into the Armenian quarter, and then you're home in the Rova. You feel safe. It's fine to walk through the Shuk, by the way. You can walk straight down without having the right to be stabbed. You own the city, you can walk anywhere. But if you were to look up your head from time to time, you would see these massive hotels just on the left as you come in the Jaffa Gate. Owned by the Greek Orthodox Church, millions of dollars have changed hands, gone into the Greek Orthodox coffers. Today there are two Greek patriarchs. They got rid of the first patriarch because they thought he was involved, which he wasn't. He's taken it to court. The second Greek patriarch's taken it to court. The first one, he's got his support base, and he's scared to be poisoned by the Greek Orthodox Church, so he hasn't left his apartment in the old city for 4 years. They get food brought up to him in a basket. Someone's got to do a movie about this. I beg you, find me someone to write a movie about this Greek salad. It's unbelievable what is happening in the old city. Anyway, that's another story. A lot of other stories.
Yeah.
Well, there are 3,300 today Arabs living in predominantly Jewish neighbourhoods, which is more than I can say that we've got. We've got, say, 2,800 Jews living in predominantly Arab neighbourhoods. And that's separate from them just building in their own areas, up, 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 community centres, extra floors, etc., etc. Toda rabba to you. Please, those who are interested to being in touch or want to do something or help, please be in touch with me, or you're quite welcome to donate or invest. I've got a sheet going around here also. And toda rabba to everyone.